Welcome to Kinfolk Lore. We're back, and after 2 years of extremely eager anticipation, we're here to preview season 2 of The Witcher, which should be arriving in your Netflix feeds tomorrow. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and for those who are joining us for the first time, we're cousins who love to explore the worlds of fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've discovered the multiverse of His Dark Materials, examined the bending of Avatar: The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra, and uncovered the secrets of Lovecraft Country. You can also find season 1 of our coverage of the first season of The Witcher in our podcast feed.
We're very excited to return to the world of Boring Hogwarts.
Woo, yes.
Catch up with our favorite evil adjacent bays.
Uh-huh.
And most importantly, see what new hits our boy Yaskier has for the charts.
He needs to compete on the charts. I mean, Iroh is very, very far in the lead as far as hit signals. I'm just saying. I'm just putting it out there. And verily, I say unto you, the era of adult content is nigh. The era of mage-induced sex parties. The time of expertly stuffed unicorn rides to remember. Woo! We want the unicorn this season. That's all I'm going to say.
Do we want the unicorn this season?
We totally want the unicorn this season. Adult content is back, like Dooney pushing up on Pavetta without Kalant's cosign. It can only end badly. Anyway, we're in here. Let's go.
All right, so we're going to do a brief refresher of what happened in season 1, just so that we're all on the same page. And also, since it's been 2 years, you may not have had time to rewatch. There's a lot of good content. We totally get it if you didn't, you know, obsessively watch The Witcher multiple times during the pandemic. I don't know anyone who did that. I'm just saying.
I mean,
like,
yes,
I didn't
you
watch
do.
It we're 4 or 5 times.
Yes, you totally do. I mean, is there a mirror handy?
I'm just saying.
I mean, are we looking?
Like, everyone can't be like that. So, so the story really follows three main characters. Geralt of Rivia, a.k.a. the White Wolf, or the Butcher of Blaviken.
Mm-hmm.
Cirilla of Cintra. And my personal fave, Yennefer of Vengerberg.
Yen.
For most of season 1, these three had their own timelines and storylines. You know, we can talk another time about whether or not that was confusing or not.
Oh, we're going to get into that.
The earliest timeline in the show is really Yen's. So Yen is a powerful sorceress trained in magic and then sent to Council Kings. Yen was born of a curved spine and faced a lot of abuse from her stepfather, which undermined her confidence. And after several different years at Aretusa, a.k.a. Boring Hogwarts, she was remade physically in a ceremony that required her to give up her fertility. This is a process that all mages undergo. After leaving her post in the Kingdom of Irden, she was a bit of a drifter for a while, you know, mm-hmm. forcing local townspeople into orgies, just, you know, doing weird stuff. She, Yen's a little strange.
She was selling erectile dysfunction remedies. Like, I mean, it was really, really good. I mean, she had
to make money.
Yes.
And she had to entertain herself. So she was doing some interesting stuff. She eventually met Geralt of Rivia, and they had an on-again, off-again relationship. She then finds her way back to Aretusa and becomes really pivotal in the Battle of Sodden Hill.
Yeah.
Which is a battle in which a group of rogue mages are trying to stop the advancement of the invading army of Nilfgaard into the north of the continent.
And in this battle, it really brings Yen's timeline into alignment with Geralt and Cirilla's, right? Geralt is a mutant made and trained to fight monsters that were brought forth by the conjunction of the spheres. And we went over the conjunction of the spheres a lot in season 1, but it's an event 1,500 years approximately before the events of the show that brought magic to the continent. Geralt spends much of season 1 wandering the continent and earning coin by fighting monsters for price. Basically, townspeople are shook by some of the things that they encounter, kings as well. Along the way, he links up with some important characters, including none other than our boy, the bard, Yaskier, a.k.a. Dandelion, who is basically Geralt's publicist. You know, he
really is. He doesn't get enough credit.
He doesn't.
The brand is strong, as Jesus and Meryl will say. And that's because of Yaskier.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's even like funny because like when you're Blood of Elves, like it's literally his introduction in the book is like people saying, we know that the story is about Geralt, we know it's about Yen, we know it's about Ciri, and you're like, damn, Dandelion is out in these streets, he's really out here. So basically he spreads the word about the Witcher, his adventures throughout the entire continent. The most important adventure takes place in the kingdom of Sintra, where Geralt saves the life of Dooney, a cursed knight who is in love with the magical princess of Sintra, Pavetta. Dooney offers Geralt a reward for his actions, and Geralt chooses the Law of Surprise, a tradition that says the receiver will get whatever blessing the giver is unaware of at the time, and usually it means a bountiful harvest or inheritance, and inheritance that one wasn't expecting. But in this case, it's a child. It's a child surprise. Oh man, and the child is Cirilla. Geralt spends much of his time shirking this responsibility, not one that he really was anticipating or wanted to have a child, until it becomes clear that Nilfgaard is advancing on Sintra. Eventually he returns only to be imprisoned by Cirilla's grandmother Calanthe because she is a boss. And she's like, fuck that. You're not taking my granddaughter. You know, she's like, I don't care.
I don't agree with Calanthe in this scene, but like, I love the way she approaches it. She's like, don't tell me anything about destiny.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear about destiny. Destiny is not going to pick up a sword and defend these people.
She's mad. She's a little tight at Geralt too, because she was going to murk Dooney. There would have been no child surprise. She was like, I'm done with this fucking guy. It's like, that was it. She's like, yo, I'm not trying to hear it. So the Lioness of Sintra, one of our favorite characters from season one, basically does what she does before the Nilfgaardian army attacks, literally hours before this attack. She throws Geralt into a cell kind of like an outdoor cell. It was weird. It was like kind of like the gates, but there was like a cell that was turned into the gates so that he can't escape.
So Cirilla's grandfather is killed in the battle and her grandmother is pretty badly wounded. Noting that the Nilfgaardians are attacking Sintra for more than just land, Calanthe sends Ciri out of the city. Ciri narrowly escapes capture by the Black Knight, aka Cahir, using magic, sort of accidentally. Mm-hmm. She basically screams and it creates a crater.
This is like her like trying to make her claim to the charts. She's like all about that life. She's hitting those high octaves like Mariah. It's really great.
So you see, Cirilla isn't a normal princess. She has powers. And she spends the remainder of the season trying to find Geralt of Rivia, since her grandmother's last words to her were, find the Witcher. He is your destiny. Mm. She has a difficult journey with her newfound friend, an elf named Dara. They travel through the continent and briefly stay in Brokolan Forest. But Cirilla eventually finds her way to a family's farmhouse and then to Geralt. And the final scene of the season is the two of them embracing in the forest and her saying, who's Yen? Beautiful.
Because he's screaming for Yennefer. Yennefer! Yen! Oh, yeah. That is... Oh, man. So that leads to our first question of what we want to see in season two. I think I want to know what the fuck happened to Yen.
I know, because Yen had a really amazing moment in the Battle of Sodden, which was essentially a battle where they were losing. Like, it looked like there was no way they could win. And then she, you know, she went Daenerys Targaryen and burnt everybody up.
Unleashed her chaos. Like, unleash it. Unleash the chaos. And you know what? Why is it okay for Yen but not okay for Dany? I'm just saying, I'm just going to leave it there. We'll get to that.
Are we sure it's okay for Yen? Because I watched that scene last night. And I was like, did she burn up literally everybody? Like, to say it survives, right? We know that she, like, was a little targeted because there's no... To say it is in the line of fire and she does not get burnt.
Yeah.
But I was looking at that battlefield and I was like, did she kill their people and the Nilfgaard? Like, is everybody dead?
Listen, you knew it was coming. I screamed at the top of my lungs and the flames started. Take cover. I'm about to unleash this chaos. That's what's happening. It's going to... I'm here for it. I mean, that was like full screaming. I mean, she has snot bubbles coming out. The drool was popping. It was like, let's go.
Yeah. I mean, it was incredible. I don't think... We certainly have never seen magic like that on the show. It was clear that Taseya was quite surprised by what she saw Yen do. And Taseya is a very powerful mage herself. That's why she's the rectoress of Aretuza. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of questions about how Yen was even able to do that, but also it was incredible. It was just like a sight to be seen. And it's lucky for them because as soon as she did that, King Foltis of Temeria showed up. Mm-hmm. So there's now an actual army to fight back the Nilfgaardians.
Yeah, and then, you know, then the reason why everyone's screaming for, looking for her is because Yen also disappears from the battlefield. Like, nobody knows where she is. So where do you think she'll be at the beginning of the season? What do you think?
So just, okay. So obviously, disclaimer, we're going to get into wild speculation here, but we're also going to discuss what we've seen in the trailers, what we've seen in some of the stills that Netflix has released for the press. So if that stuff you don't like to see trailers or teasers or whatever, then you probably don't want to listen to the rest of this podcast. Yeah. We're not a spoiler podcast, but we are going to cover the content that's already been released. So we know that she reunites with Taseya at some point, but it's clear in the trailer that Taseya is still looking for her early on in the aftermath of that battle. Mm-hmm. So I think that Fringilla scooped her up.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know how she did it, but I think Fringilla caught Yen. Mm-hmm. And she's imprisoned with Fringilla. And there is a scene in the trailer where Yen is confronting Fringilla about her, you know, behavior with Nilfgaard. So we know that those two are going to spend some time together.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the first place we see her. I think the first place we see Yen is captive with the Nilfgaardian army and basically trying to convince Fringilla that she's on the wrong side of this battle. Like, and I think that's where we first meet her. I think, you know, obviously from the trailer, we see that she finds her way back to Aretuza. So I would think that that's later in the season, or with the way they handle timelines, it could be early in the season and then just kind of disjointed. But I think like the first place we see her is going to be with the Nilfgaardian army. That's my personal feeling too.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I have some deep concerns about what's happening at Aretuza. Like, I mean, I don't mean creatively in terms of the narrative. I mean, I'm concerned about Yen because we see at Aretuza that Stregobor is there. We know that he is not her friend.
Yeah. And then like, there's this scene where she's in the seat, right? And then her head like snaps back and somebody's doing something standing behind her. And it calls you back to when she kind of like, had her initial transformation. So it's a little bit like what's going on. So I'm really interested to find out what happens there. But yeah, I think that's it's going to be interesting at what happens at Aretuza for sure.
Right. And I think Taseya is also at Aretuza. Now, whether or not they reunite there or somehow Yen is found by Taseya and brought to Aretuza, I'm not sure. But I'm just curious. I wonder what is there going to be fallout for the members of the Brotherhood who went to Sodden? Like it was an unsanctioned action, right? Yeah. And a lot of mages died. So is Taseya still the rectoress? Is she in trouble? Like, I have a lot of questions about what's going down at Aretuza.
Yeah.
Also, like, Aretuza is just not a kind place to Yen or to anyone. I mean, they literally use the young women who are not going to ascend to be mages to power the facility. Like, they turn them into eels and use them as a power source. So anytime a mage goes to Eratusa, I'm going to be a little bit concerned about what's happening.
100%. Let's talk about the, you know, giant shaped sing-off sized elephant in the room of Yen with her amazing like scream and chaos and Siri with her magic. When do they meet? When does that happen? We see in the trailer that they're riding horses together in pursuit of something. When do you think that happens?
So this is, again, wild speculation. I think it's going to happen towards the end of the season. I do think that Yen and Geralt and Ciri are going to be separated for much of the beginning of the season. My guess is that they don't reunite, like Yen doesn't meet Cirilla until either mid-season or late season. But I think Yen and is going to have her own storyline, and then Cirilla and Geralt are going to have their own storyline.
Yeah.
I think that scene where they're on the horseback is, I think they're going to Syntra. And I shared this theory with a couple people who are also fans of the show, and they thought I was crazy. But that line that Cirilla says in the trailer about, you know, Geralt is talking about how the world is messed up, and like basically until the monsters are destroyed, the world is going to be messed up. And Cirilla responds, "It's my home, it's my fight." I actually think she's responding to something about what's happening in Syntra, or what happened to Syntra. Because I think when we pick up with Ciri, if it's anything like the books, it's going to, when we pick up with Geralt and Ciri, it's going to be days after, you know, the battle at Sodden Hill when they reunited. And I think that basically it's in the timeline that we're joining the story, Syntra only was invaded a couple weeks before. Because even though Cirilla's story takes place over the course of the entire season, really only like a week or two has passed, I think.
Yeah.
Because she's still encountering refugees from Syntra as she travels. And the farmer, the merchant who finds Geralt in the last episode, the reason he finds him is because he's burying refugees from Syntra who have died and have just been left out. And so I think that they might be returning to Syntra for some reason, and Yen is going with them. I will stop my speculation there, because the reason I think this is true is because of like of something that is a huge spoiler that I think will happen this season. But that's my theory.
I can roll with that. I mean, I can definitely roll with them making it seem bigger in the trailer, that it's like, you know, she's talking about the whole continent, but in actuality, she's talking about Syntra. I could definitely see that being a meetup spot. I kind of think that they're, I think they're going to, I kind of feel like they're going to meet at Kaer Morhen, maybe. That's where they're going to meet.
Yeah.
But I also think that, you know, from the only reason I'm kind of trying to gather that is because from the trailer, it also appears that Geralt is going, to the only home he really knows, which is Kaer Morhen. So that's like the fortress where young boys are trained and tested before becoming witchers. So we're also expecting that in this season, and it's kind of, I did we see him in the trailer? Because I saw three people, but I wasn't sure whether it was him. It's kind of seems like when they're on that mountain that there's, you know, three people there. So we're kind of expecting we're going to see Vesemir.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. We know Vesemir has been casted. Mm-hmm. I just 100%. I think we're definitely, and also the Netflix, the animated film that they released was about Vesemir. Yeah. I think we're 100% going to see the relationship between Geralt and Vesemir. And when Geralt thought he was dying, that's who he called out for, two people, his mom and Vesemir.
Yeah, no, that's real. I mean, where do you think they're going to take that storyline in Kaer Morhen? Do you think we see the raid?
Okay, so again, this is another... So my feeling is that the show is mostly based on the books, not the games. There's some Easter eggs for people who play the games, but like the narrative story is based on the books. I suspect that what we will see is mostly that Geralt took Cirilla to Kaer Morhen because there's nowhere else he can guarantee her safety. Mm. He trusts Vesemir and the other witchers there. I don't know how they're going to receive her, right? Because if we recall, as people learn what Ciri's able to do, a lot of them become afraid mm-hmm. of her. And so I don't know how she's going to be received, but Vesemir is sort of like a father figure to Geralt, and I think he becomes kind of like a father grandfather figure to Cirilla, and I'm really looking forward to seeing him because I've been playing the game since last year, and his relationship with Cirilla is really beautiful. Like, they just have they're a family. Agreed. You know, like, I think a lot of people think this is a show that's like purely about monsters and magic, but it's really about preserving what's important, and they're a family. And so I would suspect that we're gonna meet some other witchers too, but most importantly Vesemir. And we know that the number of witchers is declining, so I don't think we're going to see a lot of them, but we'll see a couple of regular characters that people who have played the games or read the books know about. But I the one that I'm looking forward to most is Vesemir.
Yeah, me too. And yeah, the numbers are definitely declining, and they're definitely down one from last season.
My guy who got taken out by the Striga.
Yeah, the Striga made light work of his ass. Like, it was like,
just like, not this poor man did not even have a chance.
Not even close.
The Striga was like, nah.
It was so bad that I thought that he was like a fake witcher. I was like, he's not really a witcher. Is that real? Did he really get fucked up like that? It's terrible. So speaking of Ciri, her reception at Kaer Morhen, the things that we spoke about earlier in the episode of how she escaped from Syntra, and like, kind of, we saw that she was able to like scream and accidentally like use a magic. The show hasn't really explained the source of her magic yet. There's obviously some of us in the fandom understand some of it. We kind of hinted at it a little bit in the spoiler episode last season. There's some things that they drop Easter eggs in with some of the credit sequences, but like, we haven't really learned the source of her magic in the show. And is it the same as like what mages channel? Mages use chaos, which was originally the source of the elven magic. So it's possible, but it hasn't really been spoken about. What are your thoughts? What do you think? How do you think the show will handle this in explaining this?
I think we need to get some answers about her magic. Okay, so if we just think about what we've seen, is some pretty dope tricks by some of the mages, but mages who channel a lot of chaos, it's not like it's an infinite supply, mm-hmm. right? They become tired, they become weaker, and in some cases, if they channel enough, they die. Like, we saw that Fringilla had these mages that were creating those fireballs in the final episode of season one, and it was so much power, they literally didn't survive it. Cirilla does not seem to even need to take a nap after she creates a crater mm-hmm. or she kills multiple people. It doesn't seem to tire her. I think the show needs to give us some more hints about what Cirilla's magic is, where it comes from. We know that Pavetta was also extremely powerful. Pavetta, it was so powerful that like Geralt couldn't even use signs on her. She basically created a tornado in the throne room in Syntra. I think we need to understand more than what they did last season. Last season, what they did was they sort of just gave us in the credit sequence that song, The Last Rose of Syntra, which, you know, hints at some kind of elder blood, which is elven blood. But I think we need to know more. I don't know how they're going to handle it. My guess is that part of what Geralt and Ciri are going to do together is try to figure out what's going on with her after she's had some time to rest, after she's had some time to learn how to defend herself, because I think that's another skill set that Cirilla could really use.
I mean, you mean she can't just ask people questions to death? Like, it won't happen? It won't be like...
Oh my gosh. I mean, if she hadn't been with Dara in season one, she would have died.
I agree. Dara saved her.
Like, she did defend herself with magic a couple of times, but you can't scream and create magic every time you're in
no,
trouble.
He literally threw shit at her so she wouldn't eat poison berries, right? Like, he was like, no, don't eat that shit. She would sit out here with, like, mud in her hair. Like, that was, like, a bad, like, dye job. Like, you know what I mean? Like, let me cover up my hair. Like, yeah, Dara really, really helped her a lot. He was... I hope we see Dara again. I don't think we will, but I
don't think we will, but I really hope we do. I really like Dara's character. Yeah,
me too. Me too.
But what do you think, though, about what... Novellian, who is the character in the beginning that Geralt is talking to, he's sort of like a twist on the Beauty and the Beast myth. He starts off the trailer by saying, you know, that basically the world is really changing and monsters are almost in overdrive. Do you think that's related to Cirilla, or do you think that would have happened anyway?
So it's, man, it's a little bit ahead. Like I think it's a great question. I want to see what the show does with it. I really love this story from The Last Wish. It's one of my favorite stories in The Last Wish. It's from the first book. It's one of the short stories. And the reason I love it is because Novellin really has a depth to him as a character that you don't expect, right? You expect kind of like, and that it shows Geralt's character. Like, Geralt really, in the first season, you saw him fighting and killing a bunch of monsters, and you kind of feel as if, like, oh, he's always hired just to kill monsters. You get the sense that he doesn't just kill just to kill. And when you see some of the ways he treats some of the contracts that he's been given, but you don't get the real depth of character of, like, how he understands monsters and talks to them and gives, like, insight, or, like, really tries to understand what the problem is. You know, similar to, like, being personal friends of Haybai. But I do like
personal friends,
close personal friends.
Aang would want you to know that he is close for personal friends with Haybai.
Yeah, so like, I definitely feel like there's some really cool things about this story. I could see how they could take elements of the story, because I don't want to spoil it, because obviously it's the name of the very first episode. The short story in the book is the exact same name as the first episode of this season. So I'm not going to go too into detail, but I could see how they could tie in Cirilla into some of the conversation that's happening. I don't know that what he's saying in that line directly ties into Ciri, but I do think that it ties into the overall theme of what her work will be as a character, being the last Rose of Syntra.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying about why you like the story, because that is actually one of the things that I enjoyed the most about playing the game, is that Geralt almost never approaches a task of, like, I'm just going to murder the monster. Like, if there's a deeper story, if the monster is one that can be spoken to and you can find out what the problem is, the game gives you multiple ways to, like, negotiate to try to solve the problem or just kill
them.
Like, you as a gamer get to decide, am I going to do X, Y, and Z? But there's always the option of choosing to spare the monster depending on the story, but there's usually a way to, you know, solve the problem without just, you know, indiscriminate killing.
I mean, and you get and you get, like, a real sense, like, of, like, Novellin is a pretty, obviously he has there's some stuff that are kind of, we'll see in the show, and, you know, if people care to get up to speed, you can definitely, the good thing about this, if you want to, like, know more about Novellin before the show launches, which is going to happen, this episode's dropping a day before the show, but you could literally read this short story, you know, tonight and know basically a lot about this character. So it's actually an interesting story. I love the way it opens. I'm interested to see if that's the way it opens. I'm very interested in how they're going to tie it into, because it's very clear that it seems like, okay, this is a story from The Last Wish. It seems like there's going to be some Swords of Destiny that's kind of sprinkled in here. And it feels like they get pretty far, even into Blood of Elves and beyond. So with some of the characters anyway that are introduced, that we hear it being introduced. So it's interesting that they're going to go all the way back to The Last Wish and tie this in. And I just hope they don't make the same mistake of making the timeline so disjointed that it's hard for people who haven't read any of the content or played the games to follow along, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that about the timelines. I enjoyed some of the timeline stuff that they did, but I think that it makes the story a little bit inaccessible to some people because you got to put in work to really understand what's happening, yeah. Especially early on. I do think it becomes clear pretty quick, but I think you have to have been willing to hang in there with the show until at least episode 4.
I agree.
And that's a big ask, right? For the average viewer, for a new show especially. So I'm okay if they do a little bit of playing with time. I think that's cool. I think that's what makes this story a little bit different and fresh from some of the other fantasy stories. But I think that you have to be careful about how far you take it.
Yeah. I also think that kind of thinking about it, if you go back, I'm not suggesting this. If you're a person who hates spoilers and really wants to be surprised, like skip our spoiler episode, obviously, the last episode of the previous season of The Witcher. But I think some of the things in the history of the world that we talked about in that spoiler episode are going to come into fruition and play out in this season. I think not everything, obviously, but some of it will. We find out that, you know, the elves and other magical races were segregated from humans, who then gentrified magic by using the elves to learn how to channel chaos before fighting a war with them. So they used the elves. They basically double-crossed the elves, gentrified chaos. Over the course of season one, you can tell that things are getting worse and worse and worse for the elves. Cirilla is also separated from Dara by the end of the season. And we know we'll see some more of Philandriel, the king of the elves, right? The so-called king of the elves. So the question is, are they planning a rebellion?
I mean, there's a point in the trailer where you see that Yen and Frangilla are facing off with some elves. And there's quite a few of them. They're traveling together. It's a number of elves. So I don't know. I mean, the last time we saw Philandriel was pretty early. It was, I think, the same episode where Yaskier and Geralt met. Mm-hmm. It was the episode of the Sylvan. So at that point, Philandriel was hiding out with a couple other elves. He had no land. They were starving. That scene was years and years and years before Cirilla's grandmother systematically tried to wipe out the elves that were in their land. Mm. And so I guess what I'd like to see, are we going to see, in addition to the politics of Nilfgaard, the North versus the South, there's not that many Northern kingdoms left. I think, you know, basically Temeria is going to hold down the fort for everybody else. Are the elves also going to fight back? Are we going to see them taking back some of the land that they lost? Because they, in addition to the fact that humans now weaponize magic against them, they also lost most of their land. So I'd love to just know what's going to happen with the elves here. And they're important to the story, right? We know just having elven blood is powerful, and we know that there's been a lot of elves introduced into the story in various ways, but in the current day timeline, series timeline, things seem pretty bad for them.
Yeah.
So I'd love to know what role do they take in the ongoing conflicts. And we're also going to be introduced to, I think, some elven mages this season who are going to be pretty important characters. So all of this conflict and, you know, the history, and I'd love to know more. This is a thing that I think I wish they would do more of. They do a lot of the history telling and dialogue, but it's also not clear what to believe, right? It's been, it depends on whose point of view you're hearing it from. So I would love to learn more about where the elves have been, what the other magical races are going through, but also like what's going to happen with them. Are they just going to keep reducing their numbers as well? Or are they going to fight back?
Yeah.
Maybe they'll use the vulnerability that Nilfgaard created in the north to get some of their land back too. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, because there's definitely some politics going on in this whole world. Like, I mean, yeah, there's monsters, there's ghouls, but there's definitely politics. And, you know, the Emperor has mostly been an off-screen character. Like, we've heard a lot about him, but we don't really know much about him.
The White Flame. Huh? The White Flame.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm getting tons of Ozai vibes. Like, he's giving me a lot of Ozai vibes. Like, there's nothing, he's, like, nefarious. It's, like, all powerful, all seeing, and nobody's seen him yet. You know what I mean? Like, so.
Yeah, I think it's disturbing how they talk about the Emperor.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about him as if he is some kind of deity. It's Fringilla and Kahir are totally obsessed with the White Flame and his vision, even to their own detriment, because they were told, how about we, you know, do something else and deal with, you know, be more strategic with these mages. And Fringilla was like, nah, we got to do this now because, you know, we have to find Cirilla. The White Flame wants us to do this.
Franny's a hot mess.
It's like, okay.
Because Franny is a hot mess. And you know what? How about that lump on top of her head in the trailer? It looks like she took a couple of lumps. Like, she got, like, a nice... like, it's like somebody lumped her up real quick. Like, hey, you know what? Anyway, but Franny is a hot mess. She, you know, she's going to be confronted by Yen about being a pawn of the Emperor's pursuit for power, which is good. Well, you know, as the war plays out, we also know that Geralt's going to get involved in some way, but he hates human conflict, so it's kind of like he's going to be like begrudgingly involved. I think he hates, like, you know, getting involved in these kind of things. And he repeated Stregobor's quote about lesser evil during the series, but Nilfgaard is clearly after Ciri and he's not going to let them take Ciri. So he's going to have to get involved. Like, there is no way he's going to be able to sit this out totally.
Yeah. And again, like the quote that I mentioned earlier where Cirilla says, it's my home, my fight, she's not going to let him sit it out. I think that he has to get involved because of the circumstances. I think if Cirilla wasn't the reason that Nilfgaard was advancing to some degree, if they weren't looking for her particularly, then I think that he would be like, you know, that this is human business.
Yeah, I mean, we do get that in the trailer.
What does he say to Nivellen?
Nivellen is like, I've been around for tons of ends of times. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's all horseshit.
You know what, Geralt? That is very relatable. So easy.
Oh man, yes, multiple. Remember when we
2020 was like a constant end of days event? Like, it was just,
remember when we recorded a lead-in for Avatar and we thought like the pandemic would be over by the time we were done with Avatar?
Yes, I do remember that.
Anyway,
how could I forget?
Oh man, here we are.
We were like, is this still going to be good in 2 months? Yeah,
exactly. We're like, do you think we'll be able to use this in 2 months? Well, we did the whole Legend of Korra. It's still good. It's fine. Anyway, what are you looking forward to the most?
I'm definitely looking forward to the various relationships. Okay, so I don't... this came up a little bit at did they call it WitcherCon? What was the event?
Yeah, it was WitcherCon. It was WitcherCon. Yeah.
Okay. This came up a little bit that found family and like go like being with people is a big part of the show. Relationships are really important. And I'm totally in this show because I care about these characters. It kind of snuck up on me. Like when I first started watching the show, I was mostly like, what is even happening here? I need to understand this world. I need to understand the magic. All of that is great and fun. It makes it an engaging story. But at the end of the day, I'm here for the family. Mm-hmm. Geralt, Yen, Cirilla. That's who I'm here for. And since playing the game, I've become more entrenched in some of the other relationships, like Vesemir, Triss Marigold, who is a huge character. And I loved her in season. Remember when, like, I was like, oh, I like this Triss girl. Mm-hmm. I hope she comes back.
I love Triss.
I had no idea. I was an amateur. I had no idea. I was new to the fandom. I didn't know that Triss was like one of the bigger characters. But like watching the episode where all the relationships fall apart in season one, which I believe is episode 7. Mm-hmm. So that's the episode of the Golden Dragon. And basically, everybody breaks up in that relationship. Geralt and Yen break up. Geralt and Yaskier break up. Ciri and Dara split up. It is a heartbreaking, heart-wrenching episode. I want to see some of the new bonds, you know, be developed. So the bond between Geralt and Cirilla, because it's basically legendary. I mean, it's just, this is one of the, I think, one of the centers of the story. Okay. All the other stuff is like a side quest. Geralt and Cirilla and her story and him, how much he cares about her and what he would do for her. That is the crux of most of this world.
It's the Hound and Arya on steroids.
Oh, no. Okay. I mean, actually, Geralt... The Hound and Arya would be a good side story.
Yeah,
anyway.
Exactly. It would be. I'm telling you. It would be great.
And then Geralt and Yen, right? They're such a amazing, complicated relationship. They bring out the worst in each other, but they also connect each other to their humanity.
Yeah, they do.
So I'm really interested in seeing those two reunite, but also in seeing Yen and Ciri develop a relationship. Ciri and Geralt become this like father-daughter team. Vesemir will be in there. I mean, that's what I'm most excited about. I'm super hyped just to see everyone get back together. And the thing is, I'm confident that I know this world is not always rosy and things don't always go perfectly. But I'm really confident that they can handle whatever is thrown at them because they'll be fighting together.
Yeah, I'm also really excited to see people reunite, Yen and Geralt, to get back together. But I want some unicorn sex when it happens. That's what I want.
Oh,
that's
God.
What I'm looking forward to, okay? In The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, there's a famous romance scene players can partake in involving Geralt and Yen. And a stuffed unicorn. This is also found in Sword of Destiny and Shard of Ice. There is a passage in which it says she also possessed a very expertly stuffed unicorn on whose back she'd like to make love. Geralt was of the opinion that if there existed a place less suitable for having sex, it was probably only the back of a live unicorn. Geralt is wrong here. Geralt is incorrect. This is exceptional. And basic, all at the same time. It reminds me of when everyone was getting unicorn frappuccinos from Starbucks. It gives me the exact same feelings.
God.
Exhilarating to watch the person order it, but also unsure if they actually should finish. I want unicorn sex. This is what I want this season.
Okay? I'm not with you there. I find the whole unicorn. First of all, that unicorn just kind of like hangs out in the game in the background as well. Like it's just like constant, like it's in view in that whole scene. Yeah. And it gives me anxiety. It seems very uncomfortable. I'm not into it.
Oh my God.
But you know, I'm not a kink. I am not a kink shamer.
No.
If that's what Yen likes, that's what Yen likes.
Yen enjoys. An expertly stuffed unicorn. All right.
Where did she get the unicorn, though?
I mean, that's a good research task. I'm not quite sure, but it's like she likes an expertly stuffed unicorn. Who stuffed it? Who was this expert? Who was the expert at stuffing this unicorn? This is very important information that we need to know. And as I said earlier, the other thing...
I think we should ask our resident expert, Sloan, who has a great piece on our website for folks who before they watch, if you have some time, you can go and catch up and see if you want to do any of the reading beforehand. We're kind of short on time, so you might want to wait to watch before you, if you're going to read. But she has a great piece that is both funny and also... it's a totally helpful guide. I used it. Like, I read some stuff before the show came out, and I used Sloan's guide to
Like, literally, Sloan was the reason that I sped through chapters of the books to find out about this unicorn. Like, she was like, "You ever heard about that?" I was like, "What? What is this? What are you talking about? I need to find out about the unicorn." Oh, man. It was great. It's great. So, I'm also, as I said earlier, looking forward to the very first episode, you know, A Grain of Truth. Which it shares, you know, the title, like I said, with the short story. I love this short story, and I can't wait to see it play out. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to that part of the storytelling. I want to see where Novellin's story kind of fits in. It always makes sense after you watch. I mean, at least last season made a lot more sense after you watch the whole season and then go back why they started a season in a certain place with a certain story. So I'm really interested in that. And that, you know, that's exciting. So I can't wait to see the very first episode. And let's hope that, that, you know, the show creator keeps her promise and that there will be expertly stuffed unicorns.
I'm really curious about if this first episode is a flashback. Or is Cirilla with him?
No, Cirilla. I don't know whether they're doing this accurate to the books, but in the book, Cirilla is not with him. I can say that.
That's what I would assume. Yeah. I can't imagine him like being like, "I'm gonna stop and do a quick monster kill" when he has a traumatized teenager with him.
Cirilla's not with him.
So my guess is this is some kind of flashback that will be important. As you know, we've been talking that the time hijink stuff gives us a lot of anxiety. It both like makes it fun, but also I'm like, oh my god, is this gonna be, are we gonna be like interpreting this for people again?
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, that's what it comes down to. So let's speculate to close out. What do you think the theme from this season is gonna be? We kind of, you know, spoke about it a little bit earlier, but I thought when we were talking before we started, you had some good kind of insight on this. I think it'd be great to kind of like speak about it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned this already, but I think one of the major themes will be found family, and then one of the other major themes will be home. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I think home is really important is because you have a return to Arethusa, a return to Kaer Morhen, and you have a return to Syntra, possibly. We're not 100% sure about that. That means all three characters are possibly returning to this place where there was their origin story, this place where it is both a place where they have suffered deeply, right? Cirilla lost everything in Syntra. Yen tried to kill herself the first night she was at Arethusa. And we don't know much about Geralt's experience at Kaer Morhen, but we know that Witcher training is not fun, easy. Most of the boys who go through it die. So these are all places of extreme trauma for them, but it is also where they belong to a certain degree, like where they also have the deepest connections. Yen and Geralt are drifters. They've been traveling this continent just looking for something, looking for, you know, something to call home, to a place, people, to be connected, even though I think Geralt would say he's not looking for that, but it is what he's looking for.
Yeah.
And Ciri, this is the only place that she's known her whole life. It sounds like, you know, in rewatching season one, it sounded like she had maybe also traveled to Skellige, which is where her grandfather is from. But this is her home. She's the lion cub of Syntra. So I think home is going to be one of the major themes of the story in addition to just like the connections that make this all worth fighting for, the having people that you care about is the only reason to fight, not just for coin. So I think that those are going to be some of the major themes of the story.
I think those are good ones. I have one more that I think it's going to be about the consequences of choice and the morality within choice. Like, and what I mean by that, choices we make. What I mean by that is that Frangilla is going to be, I think, you know, I'm speculating here, but I think she's going to be kind of confronted with a choice about, you know, where she's taken her career as a mage since leaving Aretuza. I think that, you know, if in fact our speculation about Ciri going back to fight for her home is correct, there's going to be a choice that's made there, and what the consequences are. Maybe, you know, if my speculation that I won't share is it's going to be something that's going to, you know, be a huge, huge kind of like thing for her life and for the life of everyone on the continent when certain things are revealed. And I also think that could be why they're starting the story with Nevelyn, because there's a lot about morality and lying and things not always being what they look like within that story. And I think that the choices that we make have consequences based on the decisions we make and what our personal ethics are. And so I think to start with the story of Nevelyn really sets the tone for like that being a major theme throughout the season. We'll see if that's the case, but I think like there is a lot there inside of that story that would make you say, oh yeah, this is also a season about going home for sure. I think about found family for sure, but also like the choices we make and how they impact those things and what our personal ethics are in regard to family and home and defending those things.
Yeah, I mean, I have not read this story, full disclosure, but I think that you're dead on. If that's one of the themes of the story and they start the season that way, we have a small sample size, right? There's only been one other season. But the previous season, that theme that Renfri set out, which is the girl in the woods is your destiny, mm-hmm. Or girl in the forest. I don't remember exactly what she said, but destiny was the theme of season one. Not being able to avoid it, what the consequences of trying to avoid it. So I think you're definitely dead on about how they set the tone for the whole season with that first episode. So I'm really hyped. I cannot wait to watch a show. I've been waiting for this. It seems like, you know, ever since they released the first teaser, my hype has just been increasing. And now we're just days away. And I'm like, I need to see this show. I need to see this show.
Me too. I cannot wait either. So, well, you guys will be listening to this, you know, a night before or right before the initial drop. And we'll be back, like, to cover the show next week so that, you know, we can talk about things that we love, things that we saw, you know, and go over, like, different themes and kind of talk about what we talked about in this episode to see how much some of our speculation or things we were looking for actually played out. So we look forward to it, and thank you guys for coming back. We are looking forward to covering this season of The Witcher and spending it with you.
Yeah, thank you so much, everyone. Also, rate and review us.
Yes, please.
We would love to get your feedback, and hit us up on the socials, you know, KinFolklorePod on Twitter and Instagram. Send us an email. You can just look for KinFolklore on Facebook. We are excited to be back, and we are excited to talk to y'all about this.
Till next week.
Bye, everyone.